My name is Trish Ware, and I am obsessed with all things pregnancy and birth, and helping you to navigate both the practical and the magical seasons of this journey called motherhood. I'm an all-day coffee-sipping mama of seven. I've had the amazing privilege of delivering many babies in my 15-plus year career as a labor and delivery nurse and as a mama of seven. I'm here to help you take the guesswork out of childbirth so you can make the choices that are right for you and your baby. Quick note, this podcast is for educational purposes only and does not replace your medical advice. Check out our full disclaimer at the bottom of the show notes. Good morning, everyone. I am really excited. And I know you guys are like, that's what you always say. But we are pretty picky about who we choose to be on our podcast. And today's guest is Gina Mundy. And she is an attorney that specializes in childbirth cases. And so I'm really excited to have her on. Of course, we started talking before we hit record. And I'm like, hold up, we've got to talk about this on the podcast. So welcome, Gina.
Thanks for having me, Trish. I am so excited for today's conversation.
Me too. So tell me how you got into this field of working with childbirth cases. Like, how did you end up specializing with that?
Yeah, it's a really boring story. I wish it was better. Literally graduated law school, took the bar, passed the bar, needed a first job, stumbled on this area and was hired into a team of over 20 people. And this is all they did were these baby cases. And just so your audience knows, a baby case means baby's not born healthy. Baby may pass away during childbirth or mom. Mm-hmm. So these are serious cases. And I was at that age too, where I was having a baby was on my radar. So I'm like, wait a minute, I got to stick around for this job and make sure what I was seeing in these cases didn't happen during the birth of my own kids.
And that's why I wanted you on here, because we don't want you guys to end up needing to be in a case like this. And so I figured what we could do is talk about what are some safeguards that these parents can put in place and how can they advocate for themselves? What is your advice to, let's say one of your friends is pregnant or your family members, what do you tell them? What does Gina tell them at the dinner table?
So Gina tells them to read her book. I did write now. So I have two girls, 20 and 16, and I did ultimately start putting down what I know down on paper for them. Because I'll tell you, as a childbirth attorney, how I would prepare my kids, family, friends is way different than how a traditional family would prepare. So yeah, I started to write. And then as I started writing, it became quite apparent that this is information that would just not help my kids, a lot of other families. Mm-hmm. So I direct them to chapter one. And basically chapter one, those are the lessons from the baby cases. So it's a lesson we can learn from the past to help prevent the future. But lesson number one, huge, very important. You must prepare for childbirth. You must get ready. You must take those great courses. I know you offer an amazing course, but just taking those great courses and just having an understanding of what you're walking into is so crucial. It'll help things like communication, decision-making. Listen, in the cases, families are just one decision, minutes from a healthy baby. Decision-making during childbirth is incredibly important. And anything in life, are you going to make better decisions if you're educated about something or if you're not? That's a very common sense. But then also, communication is huge with your delivery team. And so you're going to communicate better if you know what you're communicating. So the number one lesson by far is just getting ready and preparing for childbirth. Now, in chapter one, I do have all of the lessons, and then each lesson is then a subsequent chapter. But yeah, that's number one. Absolutely. And then also in that chapter, I write and I tell parents like, hey, you're a mom, you're the decision maker, your delivery team and your nurse and doctor and whoever, when they're giving you or telling you something, they're actually in the form of recommendations. Not so much, this is what you have to do. And I know some doctors talk like they're telling you what to do. They're actually not. They can't. They can't do anything. They can't break your bag of water. They can't start Pitocin.
Well, let's just face it. Some of them think they can.
So that's why it's super important, again, that parents, the expecting parents, take courses like yours, read a book like mine. They're going to be like, wait a minute, what? Yeah. I'm decision maker. And oh, wow. Yeah. And decisions are really important. And so are especially the good decisions. But yeah, I know how they communicate. I've been their attorney for 21 years. I've analyzed OBGYNs. Literally, that has been my profession. So I know how they communicate. Yeah. And some, they tell me. And I'm like, I'm your attorney. So
yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah. So. Step back, Buster. Yeah. No, what's so frustrating to me and why I do what I do and why I stepped away from bedside nursing, I didn't mean to step away from bedside nursing. It's just my business took a life of its own and there was no option. But why I did it, and my motto is to change the birth culture one birth at a time, because I can't tell you how many patients I admitted that when I'm getting to know them, I'm a very hands-on, like as much as you want me to be a part of your room and in there, I'm going to be in there with you. But I would ask them, did you take a birth class? And the majority of them would say no. Or they took the hospital provided one. And I'm sorry, like I am adamantly against them. I was asked many times about teaching them at different hospitals that I worked at if I wanted to head that up. And the curriculum is very much about be a good little soldier. Here are the policies. These are the procedures. And not really explaining the patient's rights. And when the rights are breezed over during the admission process, they're not done where it's, these are your rights. It's, yeah, these are your rights, but you really need to do what I say. And so I always said no to doing that. But one of the things you said a couple of things. So I have a three-part framework in my birth program. The first one is knowledge. The second part is your mindset. And the third part is advocating. So if you're super bold and outspoken, but you have no knowledge, that's not going to do a darn thing for you. You might be that person who always stands up for yourself. But like Gina said, if they come in and they present an intervention or some sort of course of action, and you don't know what the alternatives are, you don't understand what they're saying, you don't understand the intervention, you're just going to be like, okay. So you might be bold to speak up, but when it comes to you and your baby, you're going to lean into their knowledge. So being bold without knowledge doesn't work. Having knowledge but not having the ability or the confidence to speak up doesn't work well either. And then the third part is that mindset and the belief in your body and knowing that your body was built to do this. And you have to have all three. You have to have all three to be able to really navigate that. And that's one of the things that we've done that's a little bit different than any other birth course is that we have got our courses. And of course, anyone can just buy it and do it and never reach out to us, never take part. But we also meet with our moms every Wednesday on Zoom. And we help them really digest and understand what they're learning and then how to apply it. And one of the big parts of my birth class is the hospital process. I have a lot of home birth students as well, and I have birth center students. Birth is birth, no matter where it happens. The process is different. And so I teach them from calling into the hospital to walking into triage to being taken to postpartum or to labor and delivery, getting admitted, going through the admission process. We walk through all the interventions, why they're necessary, why they're used unnecessarily. And my big thing is we can refuse anything, but should you? And I think that's where a lot of birth courses, fall short, is they're all about you have rights and you don't have to do this and you can say no. Yes, you can, but should you? And knowing when it's necessary, because you and I both know if a baby's heart rate is down in the 40s and your doctor wants to use a vacuum, You may have said, I will never, ever do that. But this might be a time you should. So it's really about that whole puzzle piece and having that, all of that. And I love that you said, I start out my free classes saying one of the biggest birth mistakes I see is winging your birth.
100%. Just,
yeah.
100%. And audience, I love this. As the childbirth attorney who only sees the bad, you're lucky you got to see good and bad. I only, for 21 years professionally, have seen the bad. And I can tell you what you're teaching your students and clients is, I'm blown away. I'm so incredibly happy right now because that is going to help parents have a healthy baby. And that's why I'm on shows like this. That's why I wrote a book, because basically, instead of getting involved in the aftermath of something going wrong, I'm trying to get involved beforehand, before childbirth, to say, hi, families, this is what you have to know. This is what you have to have an understanding of in order to have a healthy baby. And your class all day long sounds like an absolute dream. So,
well, I think we're both doing the same thing. We want to... The majority of my students who have already had a baby are coming to me because of trauma, one way or the other, one degree to the other. And I can't prevent birth trauma, obviously, because it's such a subjective range for trauma. But what I do know is if they take my classes and they participate, they will not leave their birth, no matter how it turns out, thinking, what have I done this? What have I done that? They will know that they navigated it and they made decisions alongside their care team. That I know.
Okay. And that will unequivocally reduce possible birth trauma with your clientele. That's amazing. And I'll tell you, I published my book and then I've been on shows and until I published my book, I was really just in this childbirth case world where I really wasn't out talking to moms, talking to other great people like yourself who are creating these just amazing courses. But what I've learned over the last 6 months is that, birth trauma is not, your baby can be healthy. You can be healthy and still have significant birth trauma. And I've been on a lot of shows actually with moms who they started the show because they had a significant birth trauma and they don't want other moms to experience it. Yes, their baby's fine. Yes, they're fine. But mentally, they went into it unprepared and just not ready. And now they're on this mission to make sure it doesn't happen to other families. But I'll tell you what I've learned, I think it's most important, is that it's trauma in the end. And it's some trauma stays with you, no matter what kind of trauma it is. So doing whatever you can do now to prevent it. And it is, listen, that the day you hold your baby for the first time is such a powerful, magical moment. It's a moment you dream about your entire life. So getting ready for it, I cannot stress enough how important that is as an attorney specializing in childbirth cases.
And I tell them all the time, no matter how many babies you have, you only have that birth with that baby one time. And do what you can. What is in your control? What is in my control? What's in my control is educating myself, communicating with my team, preparing a support group, whether it's your partner or a doula or whatever, and preparing my home. Because like you said, there's a lot of things that can. And talking about trauma, when what I was taught in training to be a labor nurse is that birth trauma meant like a catastrophic event. That was birth trauma. And what I've learned is that the BS we say, at least you and baby are fine, is horrible. And part of my program, we also have a mama membership. It's pregnancy and postpartum. Some of my girls have been with me like going on 3 years at this point. And part of that membership includes weekly hangouts with our postpartum moms. And I'm just going to be completely transparent. And a lot of my listeners have heard me say this, but it's still, honestly, there have been times I've laid in bed just like, what in the world? Because, and the reason is we started hanging out with them every Thursday, the postpartum moms. I'm a labor and delivery nurse. I recover you for 2 hours and you're on your way. The majority of time I've ever spent with postpartum moms has been in real life, I say that with quotes, with my own friends, and most of us had babies at the same time. None of us had time to sit down and have a really deep conversation. We're trying to breastfeed, our nipples are hurting, our butt hurts, kids are running around. You don't have time to sit and say, hey, I know that my baby's healthy. I know that I'm healthy, but I'm reliving my birth because A, B, or C happened. And the very first postpartum hangout we had was one of the most powerful experiences we've ever had with a group of women. And all of us are so bonded, that group, because one of the moms had the courage to say some of the things she was going through. And it was the first time I brought my VBAC moms together with my Calm Labor mom. So I have two birth courses. One is Calm Labor, Confident Birth. That's for anyone, first baby, second baby, hospital, home birth, whatever. The VBAC lab is specifically for someone who's had a C-section who wants to have a vaginal delivery. I always kept them apart, right? And so some of those students, this is the first time they met. Part of the reason I kept them apart is that I don't want these moms who wanted a vaginal birth so badly and didn't get it to talk to this mom who had this perfect vaginal birth. But they started healing together because we had one mom that on the outside, she had a 2-hour labor. She got to the hospital. She delivered really fast. And it sounded like an amazing birth. Perfect. She cried and shared with us for 5 minutes talking about her emotions because it happened so fast. It was so traumatizing to her, and she had plans. They had a playlist and they had twinkle lights. So to some people that might be like, so someone who ended up in emergency C-section, if they didn't get to know her and see the emotions, the deep emotions she was feeling, they might have blown her off, right? But it was so apparent to all of us that she was traumatized, and we were able to walk through that with her. And that has been life-changing for me as a labor nurse, honestly, to experience that with these moms. That was a shocker to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. Yeah, it sounds amazing. That, because you're right, you would only see them for the first couple hours, see ya, have a nice day until you start that group.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a great resource. I wish I had something like that when I was...
Oh, me too.
My oldest is 20 now. Youngest is 9. But I know you have 7 kids.
You sound like me.
Yeah.
My oldest is 34 and my youngest is 9.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, you have a huge gap.
I started very young and ended old. But yeah, it's been a really amazing experience. And I also have 3 doulas on my team. And so to bring us together, because typically in the real world, they butt heads, doulas and labor nurses. So it's just been a really amazing experience. And yeah, to be able to process that trauma and to walk through. And I'm not saying that some of my students have had students have had losses. They've had fetal demise, which is, for those of you guys listening, they've had babies that have been stillborn. And, you know, one of them that I'm thinking of, she's pregnant with her 2nd baby after her loss, and she's still one of my students. She's involved in my community. I love her dearly. Support is everything.
Oh, yeah.
As well.
Sounds like what a great resource. I'm just so blown away listening to you. I love it. And by the way, I love doulas. As a childbirth attorney, I've never had a doula in a case. If a doula would have even stepped in the labor and delivery room, she'd be a fact witness. If she even talked to a mom during pregnancy, she'd be a fact witness. So doulas are definitely doing great things too.
Okay, hold up. Let's pause. What you're saying is that these worst case scenarios who are suing doctors and hospitals, right? That's what we're saying. Don't have doulas.
Correct. They do not have doulas.
There's a connection there, people.
Yes. And so once I figured that out, when I wrote my book, again, I'm in my just litigation attorney world. I focused on, okay, what are the common facts, common issues in the baby cases? That's chapter 11. Just so that way parents know, I give the top 10. That way they have a heightened sense of awareness. It helps activate their intuition. Again, back down to decision-making, they can make better decisions. What I did not focus on until after my book was published, so maybe this will go into the pregnancy book, but what's not in these cases? Doulas. And then another thing is spontaneous vaginal birth with no epidural. Those cases are few and far between. And I know. And
yes, I'm going to start screaming in a second.
Yeah. Then I got to tell you this then. So do you want to try to guess the number one most common fact and issue in a legal baby case?
Pitocin, probably.
Yeah, you're right. 100%. 100%. The most common fact.
I feel so emotional, you guys, right now. Like, I want to start crying because sometimes I'm so exhausted with labor nurse mama. Like, it's exhausting. I am a labor and delivery nurse. My passion, my goal, like my drive to be a nurse was not to be a nurse. It was to be a labor and delivery nurse. And I'm going to tell my story tonight during my workshop. But I have never been more disheartened and disgusted by what I saw behind the scenes once I got my dream job. And it was a very specific patient who I labored with her all my whole shift. I was night shift at the time. She was amazing. She did not need Pitocin. She did not need intervention. I knew damn well that this doctor did not like to stay long. He wanted to get home. He was pushing her. I sat by her bedside as long as possible. I always teach my patients, and in my course, I teach them how to basically understand the fetal monitor so they know the difference between a low heart rate and a sleeping baby. And because they will use that a lot to go back to the OR. And so I sat there as long as I could, had to go to the bathroom, ended up coming back. They're prepping her for the OR. And this was a very healthy, spontaneous labor. She did everything right. They talked her into Pitocin because you were doing really good, but we don't want this to turn into something. It doesn't need to be. Ended up on Pitocin despite this is why I do what I do. Because at the bedside, I have to just follow his orders. Now, if he's doing something grossly negligent, obviously I'm going to go to my charge nurse. But basically, this is hospital policy. This is standard. This is what we do, which is pretty much put you all on Pitocin for one reason or the other. And so she ended up on Pitocin. Then it just wasn't. And so she ended up in the OR. And I remember that next day crying in my car. And at the time, like, this is before Instagram was like a big thing. This is before online educators. I really didn't know what to do. So I started a blog.
Oh, well, you did something. Good.
I did do something. It was a hot mess, but I started a blog. And now I do what I do. And I'm so passionate about it. Oh, have you ever seen Ricky Lake's documentary, by the way?
No.
You need
really?
To watch it.
All right, I'll watch it.
It's what's really interesting about it. It's called The Business of Being Born. And what's very interesting about it is that her partner and videographer, like the person whose video is pregnant and ends up with an emergency preterm C-section. The whole point of it is talking about this business. And there is one scene that is so freaking accurate. And it's the doctors coming in and looking at the whiteboard because we always have a whiteboard. We have the rooms, we have categories, and it'll say whether she's got an epidural, whether she's in induction, if she's at this point of her whether she's inactive or latent, whether she has Pitocin or not. And there's a scene where they're like, did you up the Pitocin? Is the Pitocin on? What's the Pitocin on? Is the Pitocin up? Have you put it up? When's the last time you went up? It's like some Pitocin, Pitocin, Pitocin. That is so freaking accurate.
Yeah. What's crazy? I wrote my book to expecting families to help them. Pitocin being, I don't just identify Pitocin as the number one most common fact in a legal baby case. I'm like, listen, based upon my 21 years traveling across the country, whatever, researching the drug, cross-examining OBGYNs extensively on this drug, you name it. I wrote chapter 14, and that is how to have a safe Pitocin induction. I have gotten so much feedback from my labor and delivery nurses. They're literally, because I'm a, if you're going to do it, and that may be a good option for a parent or an expecting mom, maybe it is. If you're going to do it, I'm definitely the slow and steady.
Low and slow.
Let it hit your sweet spot.
I have a whole lesson on
this.
Stop it. I have a whole lesson on this in my course.
Slow and steady.
And the studies have shown that is what's effective. And this is so maddening. Starting low and going slow and stopping it when the body takes over. And I can tell you, as a 16-year labor and delivery nurse, that it is very apparent to all of us. It's a very different pattern presentation of Pitocin contractions versus her body taking over. We know when it happens. And they want us to just go up, crank it.
So the labor and delivery nurses have been using my book against the physicians, so they don't have to up it. Because they don't want to up it. And so they're like, no.
Oh, I was that nurse that was like, oh, yeah, I'll go in there. Okay. And avoid. I even have a reel on this because I literally never went up by two. I always went up by one.
Oh, my God. Wow. Oh, my goodness. This makes me so incredibly happy. Because you know what? Somebody may need a Pitocin induction. The introduction to my book is my niece's story. She had a rough childbirth. Basically, she went in at 38 weeks. There were concerns about the baby. I saw the heart rate. There were legit concerns.
It's necessary when it's necessary.
Yeah. And she had two choices, Pitt induction, C-section. And it was a good choice for her. Mm-hmm. And that obviously it was crazy slow, crazy steady or whatever. Yeah. Even then, it was still hard.
And I'm just going to be very real with you. The doctors have a very easy time convincing the moms that they want to go up because the moms are tired of it. It's exhausting. Inductions they're exhausting mentally, physically, emotionally. They just want to meet their babies. It's a very ripe environment for the doctors to manipulate them into rushing things. Because I've had I am a homeschool mom. I love education. I would spend so much time educating my patients. And I swear to God, 90% of them would then do exactly what the doctor said, despite what I told them and even warned them would happen. And so let me just tell you this really quick. My very first labor and delivery job was at a birth center. It was a freestanding birth ward, okay, at a freestanding hospital. This is going to make you literally, your stomach get sick. They had no blood in-house. They had no doctor in-house. They hired 32 of us new nurses on night shift with no doctor at night and no blood in-house. And the charge nurse for labor and delivery was also the charge nurse for the general med-surg floor on the bottom floor of the hospital. But they had decided that they wanted to go to become a high risk. So they were starting up until like around the time I got hired and why they hired so many of us. Now, I came into this blindly. I just wanted to be a labor nurse. I didn't know anything. And they hired all of us, which was a nightmare in itself. The majority of their patients were inductions and they were transitioning to this high risk status. They were transitioning to a level two NICU. Before that, they had just a nursery. And they were trying to move up from like maybe even going to level three. I don't remember exactly what it was. It's been so long. This was so long. This was 2006, seven. I don't remember. Anyway, so they are sending us in groups to get trained at the big hospital that they're attached to, the high-risk hospital. However, they were bringing in inductions after another, and they were going up 4x4.
What?
Yeah.
None
of us had a clue, right? And so I took my first travel assignment because we needed some extra money. And I heard about it. It was a 4-week assignment in California. I thought it was going to be a one-time thing. I learned more in that 4-week assignment with union nurses who don't do shit unless they want to. I tell you that much. I learned more. And we were doing blood sugars on every baby. We were doing insane things. And I came back and quit the job. I was like, I'm not losing my license for these people. There's no way. I was sick. And I even met with them to talk to them about that's not safe, what you're doing. It was, and I never saw that anywhere else, but it was a nightmare, a nightmare.
Yeah. And it's so scary.
It is scary.
I'm telling you, that's what I tell people. I always say, I'm like, I was hired into a team of 20 people. This is all we did, baby cases. I know nobody knows we exist unless you have an unfortunate labor and delivery, but and this stuff happens, but it's, again, getting ready, understanding, you'd be much better off just
knowing. My students know the rate that Pitocin is ordered, and they know the rate that I say to ask for, and they will push back, let me tell you. And these doctors, one of the doctors told my student who was, she was, oh my gosh, what was she? I think she was 41 years old. And I don't remember, but he told her that basically no one delivers without being induced. Like it just doesn't happen.
Oh my goodness. So hold on. I was on the phone with the doctor. Hold on. And he told me the standard of care. So that means what a reasonable and prudent physician must do or does. If a patient is a good candidate for an elective C-section at 39 weeks, the standard of care is that he or she, the doctor, must offer that patient an elective induction. That's per the standard of care these days. That's what he's telling me. I'm like, what? I was my stomach went upside down. Do you?
I need to start a book with some of the bullshit these people say.
Yeah, this is very interesting. And then, so in my book, in my How to Have a Safe Pitocin Induction, I am definitely a 1. Let your body respond to it. Only go up by 1. 6 is the equivalent to, supposed to be equivalent to, you know, labor. And then most orders go to 20. In my book, I'm like, stop them at 10. So if you're going to have an induction, it's something you need to talk to about with your doctor during your pregnancy. If it's something that happens at the hospital, you didn't want it, but you know what? That's going to be a good choice given your labor. You should have a basics so you understand it. So then you can talk to the doctor. But I have them in the book. No, stop the Pitocin at 10. Your order can only go to 10, not 20. And I don't even want them to get to 10, but hey, if it does, that maybe that everybody reacts to Pitocin different, if it is what it is. But yeah, no, I think you'd find that if you haven't read it.
And the other thing is that can, what I recommend they do is go low and slow until the body takes over. Once you're making consistent cervical change, tell them you want it stopped or cut in half, period.
Yes, 100%.
And that is the biggest thing that these doctors fight back on and do not give much on.
Real quick, in the baby cases, that's the biggest issue. And here's the deal. Here's the deal, everybody. So I, like I said, I've traveled the country meeting with delivery teams and doctors and nurses, and everybody has different opinions on how to administer Pitocin. So for instance, I have a case involving Pitocin. I have to retain expert doctors to look at the case, and they will look at the care. They'll look at the medical records, and they'll tell me, was the care that mom and baby received, was that good care or bad care? Was the Pitocin induction reasonable within the standard of care, or was it unreasonable? And I will literally have 2 doctors. And the first doctor will tell me everything was done wrong. The Pitocin was incorrectly administered. Basically, they blew the baby out of the uterus with too much Pitocin. And then I'll have my second doctor look at the case. And the second doctor, I'm not kidding you, will tell me that everything was done correctly and the Pitocin was correctly administered and it had nothing to do with what went wrong during delivery. So when that doctor told me that, I was so like, how is that possible? So I asked her about the first doctor. I said,
probably because the second doctor was like, shit, this is exactly what I do. And if I say it's wrong, then I'm wrong.
Yep. So
that's my opinion.
So I said, listen, the first doctor said everything was done wrong and they blew the baby out of the uterus with the Pitocin. And that doctor goes, I'm offended by that statement. And I'm like, wow.
But this, order set.
These doctors have very different opinions. So it's important to understand one doctor may be a slow and steady. One doctor may be very aggressive.
Yeah. And the thing about that's so maddening is that they come up with ways to support whatever it is they want, no matter whether it's the right thing or not. And I've seen that through the course of my career, because when I first started, it was not the norm to be induced, right? Then I went through a season of my career where they were scheduling an induction at the very first prenatal appointment. Then they clamped down on them and said it had to be a medical reason if it was before 39 weeks, could not happen after 39 weeks. Then we get this whole stupid arrive study, which is bullshit.
In the book.
Bullshit.
Chapter 14.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to order your book because it's so frustrating. And so we see, and I always joke that there's probably like America's most wanted picture of me on every labor and delivery unit, because I know the doctors hate me. But what we would see is then they find a way to get around that. Suddenly everybody has a big baby, or everybody has a small baby, or her water would break in an appointment.
During a vag exam, by any chance?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
By the way, water breaking is huge.
I know. So, and I tell my, my students are told not to allow them, if they decide they want to it, not to do it until they're in late active stage of labor.
Oh my gosh. Listen to this. Ready? Chapter 11. One of the most common facts and issues in the baby cases. And this is more of a point in time. If there's a complication or a mistake, it is almost always after the water breaks. That decision is huge. In the book, I'm like, listen, doctor wants to break your bag of water. You say, is there a medical reason or do you want to be home for dinner?
And the thing about it is the studies show that it only shortens their labor by 30 minutes. What the hell? Now, there are times during an induction where breaking the water will speed things up, but it's not worth the risk. It's not.
So if mom has already had a baby, so mom's on baby two, she's having a pit induction, and she doesn't really want to increase the pit, that might be, depending on mom, a good option in order to avoid increasing the pit and getting the natural contractions going.
Let me tell you really quick, and this is going to probably make you cringe as well. So I've done pretty much my entire career travel, mostly on the West Coast, which I love, Seattle. I got chastised one time by a doctor for starting IV fluids on a labor patient.
What? That makes no sense.
It does, because they encourage actually drinking and eating, which is the best.
Oh, okay.
So I started the IV and then hung fluids. And she was like, why did you put fluids? But on the East Coast, we start at IV, we do fluids, they only get ice chips. That's the norm.
Yeah, but I'm more East Coast.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
In Seattle, they see birth as a natural process and you only intervene as needed. IV fluids, that's an intervention. If you have a healthy mom who is consuming fluids, now, I go either way with my students. If they don't want to have an IV site, that's their choice. I personally would rather have one, a HepLock in, because I don't like to get an IV. I don't like getting stuck myself, and I don't want it in an emergency. I want the calm nurse who knows what she's doing to do it when I'm calm. But if they don't want, this is what I was going to tell you. So I did most of my career on the West Coast, which is way more advanced than the East Coast. And we move back to Nashville and I get my first job, and we had a provider who would come in at 7 a.m. on all of his inductions, whether they came in the morning or the night before. It gets worse. He would break their water with an FSC, with a fetal scalp electrode, and put it right on. At half a centimeter.
Wow. I talk about that in my book, the doctors who come in at 7 a.m., and they'll come in because they want to be home for dinner. They want mom delivering by lunch, and they do these 7 o'clock rounds. And yeah, how do
they,
I know?
And what they want for us, they call us at 6:15 and tell us to have the pads under her bottom, to have a pad ready for her, to have the amni hook out, to have all the things and be at bedside because they're coming in really quick to break her water. Do they say, hey, how dilated is she? What's going on? Like, where is she at in her labor? No, they don't care.
Yeah, I know this, obviously. So this is not a good practice. And I talk about in my book, individualized care, not your generic care. That would be generic care. Again, you got to ask questions. Again, like you said, advocate. Now, do you teach them at all about the fetal monitor strip?
I teach them everything.
Okay.
My students will say to me, there's a couple things that I hear all the time. One is, Trish, you were in my head the whole time. The other thing I hear a lot is that their nurses will be like, oh my gosh, as much as I do, like, how do you know all this? And then the other thing that is really common with my students is most of them, the majority of them, don't get to the hospital till they're 7 or 8 centimeters.
Oh, nice.
Which prevents a lot.
Yeah. No, I do the baby's knowing and understanding the baby's heart rate, because that is the basis of so many decisions. If there's a concern or if they want to do
coercion.
If they want to do something, it stems from the baby's heart rate. So like chapter 8 are the different types of fetal monitors. Huge. Chapter 9 is how to read the baby's heart rate, because I've had doctors testify.
Yeah, I teach them that as well.
They're like, hey, Gina, the only way a baby can talk to me during labor is their heart rate. And I'm like, ding, ding. Hey, mom, the only way, if you can read your baby's heart rate, apparently they can talk to you. So let's go over that. So again, basis. But then, chapter 10 is, I go through all the interventions too, because again, it's so incredibly important, because the doctor, it's not concern of the baby's heart rate on the baby and the monitor C-section. It's concern. And then you have your interventions. And so it's really important to understand those before you go into labor. So I love that you teach that.
Yeah, too. That's what I was telling you before with my patient who really changed everything for me. I always teach them. Back then I would teach my patients and their partner right when I admitted how to read the strip, how to tell, is this a sleeping heart tone or is this a minimal variation? And so I have a whole lesson on that in the partner. I have a birth coach class, and I encourage them both to take all the classes. But in the birth coach class, I usually teach them more thoroughly, because when mom's laboring, her only job is to labor. She doesn't need to worry about the monitor. She doesn't need to worry about advocating. At that point, her partner should be as educated to speak up for her. And so I do teach them how to tell, because I can't tell you how many hundreds of doctors over the course of my career have come in and they're like, you've been at this for a while and I want you to look. You see how the baby was looking really good right here. Now this is not looking so good. They're getting tired. No, they're asleep. Just like me, if I'm asleep, my heart rate is not going all over the place.
Oh, yeah. And I love your support person. In my book, chapter 7 is baby advocate. So it's husband, grandma, best friend, doula.
Well, the problem with the doula, though, is that the doula's hands are tied, because they cannot accept or refuse anything for the patient. The partner can. During those things. But
yeah, but even though the doula, I like, because the delivery team is typically, unless, you know, besides doctor, but they're usually not at the hospital. Sometimes they are, if they have a shift, they're picking up or they're coming in to check on them. But the delivery team, though, is also typically who's scheduled to work that day. So that's why I always liked having the doula come in. And again, this is more from when I published the book doulas must be doing great things. But I go in my book because, again, doulas really didn't come. It wasn't clear until after I published my book on how important it is to have a doula. So I go into support persons, as in dad, grandma, best friend, whatever. These are the things they need to do or know. I have 5 things at the end of my chapter that they need to know to be a good advocate.
Yeah. The studies have shown that having an educated support person consistently at bedside, and The studies really lean more towards that being a doula. But I truly believe that if your partner, and for sure if they take my courses, because we go through positioning and they know everything. But if you have an educated support person at bedside, you are more likely to have an uneventful vaginal delivery. You're less likely to have interventions, less likely to have a C-section, more likely to perceive your birth experience as positive, and your baby is more likely to have a higher Apgar score. That's by having an educated support person.
I agree with that 100%, maybe 1,000%.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's literally, I almost named my book Baby Advocate and I didn't. Now it's A Parent's Guide to a Safer Childbirth. Oh, yeah. You like the subtitle though, because the subtitle is so you, expecting the best, using the power of knowledge to help you deliver a healthy baby.
Boom, I love it.
Boom, your course. I love that your course covers all that. This is how you have a healthy baby. You walk in with the knowledge from Trisha's course and you will have such a great understanding of what's happening and you're going to have such a better experience. I'll tell you, the hardest part of my job is when I have to sit down with the families and talk about the day their baby was born. And it's always hard, but I'll tell you, the saddest part is when the families know so much more in the aftermath of something going wrong. I know if they would have known a lot of this beforehand. Maybe,
and then they're filled with the what ifs.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I'm saying. There's a really good chance they never would have met someone like me. And I'll tell you, the guilt. So we talked about this. I'm going to launch my own podcast here coming up. But the first person on my podcast, a mom who delivered a baby 4 months ago, 4 months ago from now. And she's a nurse. And she did not prepare for labor and delivery. She's obviously not a labor and delivery nurse. She walked in with a healthy baby and she left and her baby is permanently very sick. And the amount of guilt and the amount of anger that she has every day, it's overwhelming. And she just, it's heartbreaking. Talk about not being able to sleep. She is my first episode because I do want parents to know this can happen. It just happened. And we're a little fluffier with it. But then the episodes after, which I want you on because I want you to teach my audience how to have a safer childbirth and tell them about your course and everything. But that's how I started. But no, I didn't sleep that night. And I knew that what me and you are doing right now is so incredibly
so important
to help parents have a healthy baby.
Yeah. And it's my goodness. It's the problem, the disconnect. And where I have such a hard time is I'm so passionate about what I do. My course is so low priced and I include so much support. I've got a team of doulas. We're there. We really are hands on with them. But the maddening part is getting them to understand how crucial this is before they're sitting at the table with you or before they're sitting alone in the room and thinking, oh my God, why? Or they come to me I don't have to convince my moms who have already had a baby to take my class. They're ready and they're like, yes, everything she's saying is true. If I had done this, if I had not done this decision led to all of that. And those are not the hard ones. It's these first time moms. And I don't want to sound salesy, but every time they ask me, what can I do? I'm like, take my class. That's what you can do. I promise you. It is the thing you have to do. And one of the things I ask during my free workshops is, why do you think that HSA and FSA and insurance covers childbirth classes? There's a reason, because it costs them a lot less money if you're educated, because you're not going to end up doing all the things, most likely. Obviously, like we said, there's a reason for all of these interventions, and there are reasons that are 100% necessary. But insurance companies are ahead of us because they know that an educated mom is less likely to end up in all of this other BS. And they don't want to spend money. They're not about you, they're about money. That's what they're about. Yeah. So anyway, I could literally go on and on. I would love to have you come into the membership and chat with my moms. I would love it. We need to talk more about that. But thank you so much. Let everyone, can you tell everyone, and I'm going to link to her book and to her socials so you guys can find her, but just tell everyone where they can find you.
Oh, sure. So always the best spot, easy peasy, if you know my name, Gina Mundy, GINAMUNDY.com. And then that'll give you, my Instagram. I've been more on that at Gina Mundy. And then, yeah, pretty soon I'll have my YouTube channel up and running with my podcast, The Childbirth Attorney with Gina Mundy. And yeah, but everything is always on my website. I do have some other resources on my website. Obviously, Trish, I'm putting your course up on my website.
I love it.
As a huge recommendation.
I love it.
Again, and if a resource goes up on my website, it's because something I have vetted out and I would recommend to my family and friends.
Thank you so much. And I really enjoyed this conversation. Wow, what an incredible episode. It's so validating for you guys to be able to hear someone else saying exactly what I've been saying. Like some of those points that Gina made literally are just mind-boggling. So I'm going to link to her book, link to her resources. If you have not jumped into my birth classes, don't forget, not only do you get my birth classes, you also get weekly hangouts with me and two doulas. Did you hear Gina say that none of her cases, those mamas had a doula? That is powerful. Use the coupon code POD50. Go to labornursemama.com/calm and get $50 off. Join and come to our hangout every Wednesday on Zoom. Okay, you guys, as always, hit subscribe, write a review. Tell me how much you loved this episode because I'm sitting here blown away. And I'll see you again next Friday. Bye for now.